Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to day 162. We are in 2 Samuel chapter 18 to chapter 20. Actually, I kind of let the cat out of the bag a little early yesterday. The section where Absalom dies started yesterday, but the actual words, like the verse where Absalom dies, happens today. And so we actually already have context for what's going on in the story. The thing that's going on in the story is a domino effect. Okay. David starts all the way back at chapter 10. Okay. So from chapter 10 all the way through chapter 18, this is a domino effect. So chapter 10, David is fighting. I think it's against the Ammonites. Am I right? Is it the Ammonites? Yes. I'm pretty sure. Yes. It's the Ammonites. Okay. There's just so many people groups. Amalekites, Ammonites. I'm a stickler on saying things correctly. Okay. So chapter 10, there's a battle against the Ammonites. You have to stop because winter has started, but the Israelites have really, socked it to them, okay? Like, the people of Israel have crushed it in terms of fighting against the Ammonites. And again, sometimes victory brings arrogance, and victory brings a level of comfort that you don't have when you're young and hungry. And instead of going out to war, David sends Joab when he should have gone himself. And that one decision prompts the rape of Bathsheba, the killing of Uriah, the Lord being displeased, David saying a foolish statement, which is, tell Joab, be encouraged. We don't know why the sword comes to one person's house versus another person's house. But the reason that the sword was at Uriah's house was because of David. So him playing stupid is silly here. You can't play dumb with God. And David had sent this person to do that and sent this person to do that and sent that person to do that. And, arrogantly is saying, well, you don't know why the sword has come to one person's house over the other. God is not happy about this. And so God sends Nathan, says, you want to do some sending? I'll do some sending. And then God says to David, actually, since you are the one who sent the sword to Uriah's house and you want to act stupid, you want to act like you don't know, you want to act brand new, I'm sending the sword to your house, which immediately prompts Amnon to rape Tamar. David doesn't do anything about it. And you can see divine providence and human acting the way that humans would act. Okay. I say it all the time. There's a thin line between me doing what is predictable based on my own humanity and me acting my best. And me acting my best is dependent upon me being in tune with the Holy Spirit and God's grace in my life. Okay, if you leave me to my own devices, I will self-sabotage. And the same is true for all of us. And what we've seen, once David stays in Jerusalem instead of fighting against the Ammonites, God is leaving people to their own devices. We believe in the sovereignty of God and free will. And you've got to hold both of those intentions. So did God make Amnon rape Tamar? No, I think he just allows the sin that was in Amnon's heart to overcome him. So Amnon rapes Tamar. Absalom sees that David, who's acting like himself, doesn't do anything. And since he's passive, he kills his brother. Then the same David who's passive with Amnon is passive with Absalom. Absalom runs amok, usurps his dad's throne, sleeps with his concubines, is acting as co-regent in Hebron, okay, is turning the hearts of the people while he's at the city gates. He's doing all this political maneuvering, and now they're in full-blown civil war. Now, here's what you need to know as you go into chapter 18. So the context has just been one thing after another, after another, after another, after another, and we've seen a butterfly effect from 2 Samuel chapter 10, all the way to 2 Samuel chapter 18, we've just seen a butterfly effect, okay? Where this impacts this, which impacts the next thing, and so on and so forth. So what's now going to happen. Chapter 18 opens, and verse 2, the king told the troops, "I myself will surely march out with you." But the men said, "You must not go out. If we are forced to flee, they won't care about us. Even if half of us die, they won't care. But you are worth 10,000 of us. It would be better now for you to give us support from the city." The king answered, "I'll do whatever seems best to you." So I just want to kind of help you wrap your mind around this, okay? If David dies in battle, his son automatically becomes king, but his son is now his enemy. So David cannot die, okay? The worst thing that could happen would be for David to die, because Absalom, by blood, would be his successor. But he's now his enemy. And so the worst thing that could happen is that David would die. And the men know that. The men get that. And so they're saying, "You can't go out with us." Okay. But David really is saying this in verse 5. "The king commanded Joab, 'Be gentle with the young man Absalom for my sake.'" Okay. "And all the troops heard the king giving orders concerning Absalom to each of the commanders." Okay. "Be gentle with Absalom. It's my son. And Joab is going to murder Absalom." So what's going to happen? Okay. Verse 8. It's going to say, "The forest swallowed up more men that day than the sword," which means God is fighting with David. And so verse 9, "Absalom happened to meet David's men. He was riding his mule. And as the mule went under the thick branches of a large oak, Absalom's hair got caught in the tree. He was left hanging in midair while the mule he was riding kept on going." So he's stuck in a tree by his hair. At this point, they could capture him. Okay. They could keep him a political prisoner. They could gouge out his eyes. They could do a whole bunch of things. But of course, Joab, verse 14, said, "I'm not going to wait like this for you." So he took 3 javelins in his hand and plunged them into Absalom's heart while Absalom was still alive in the oak tree. Okay. And 10 of Joab's armor bearers surrounded Absalom, struck him, and killed him. Was Joab gentle with Absalom? He completely disobeyed the order of David. But does David have the backbone to deal with people close to him? No. Okay. He does not discipline Amnon. He does not discipline Absalom. And he definitely does not discipline Joab. And the reality is that as a leader, you can't really boss people around who have dirt on you. Okay. So David is a compromised leader. It's Joab that killed Uriah for him. And Joab knows that he killed Uriah for David. And so Joab's kind of got David by the bleep, okay? Because Joab doesn't really have to listen to what David has to say because David has compromised himself morally. Moreover, David kind of needs Joab to do the dirty work. And this is terrible. I mean, Joab has now violently killed Absalom. This is murder, okay? This is no debate whether or not this is murder, okay? One little nerdy nugget. I'll give you a couple nerdy nuggets. Absalom dying because of the beauty of his hair. Had he not had long hair, his hair wouldn't have got caught in the thick branches of a large oak tree, okay? Absalom dying based on the beauty and the length of his hair is very reminiscent of Eli dying because he was fat, okay? It's very much so, yeah, you being fat was because you stole meat from people. So you got fat because of sin. And for Absalom, it's the same. You grew your hair because of vanity. You grew your hair because of pride. And now the very source of your idolatry becomes your downfall. It becomes the thing that causes you to literally die. And this is all of us. That can be a timeless truth right there. Most of us, the thing that is killing us is the idolatry that's in our life. It's not external factors, it's internal factors. You're fat because you've stolen meat. You have long hair because you are vain. And it is your vanity, it is your greed, it is your fat, it is your hair that's actually going to be the thing that kills you. So it's the hare that gets him stuck in the tree. He's still alive when they find him, okay? But because he's stuck, Joab's able to kill him. Okay, next. David passively, aggressively demotes Joab. But he should 100% have charged him for murder. And this is not the first time Joab should have been charged for murder. Okay? He's not the first person he's murdered. And by all means, I need you to realize this. There's a difference between killing someone and murdering someone. Very, very different. Okay? The death penalty is killing someone. That's not murder. Murder is killing someone that the law does not give you license to kill. Okay? So just if you're at war and you're killing someone that Yahweh's commanded you to kill, that's not murder, but it is killing them. This is murder. Next, David replaces Joab with Amasa or Amasa, but very passive aggressive. Okay, we're now going to see political division between the men of Israel and Judah. Now that division, the men of Israel and Judah, is going to become a full-blown split after the reign of Solomon. We'll see that in the book of Kings. David is in a game of political compromise. David is dragging his feet and not going back to Jerusalem, which is exactly what happened when David stayed in Ziklag. Chapter 20, verse 1, is the last chapter we're going to cover. We're now going to get a rebellion by a man named Sheba. Since Absalom was allowed to rebel, now Sheba rebels too, because rebellion is contagious. Whenever a regime or a political party or the government is weak and does not stamp out rebellion and does not communicate, rebellion will not be tolerated. Rebellion becomes contagious because rebels get emboldened when they are able to see other rebels not dealt with swift justice. And since Absalom was dealt with very passive-aggressively, now Sheba is going to rise up. And you see, okay, verse 2, so all the men of Israel deserted David to follow Sheba, son of Bichri, but the men of Judah stayed by their king all the way from the Jordan to Jerusalem, okay? So you may need a map, okay? The men of Judah means the tribe of Judah. The men of Israel would be all the other tribes. And that division is going to become, I mean, after Solomon, there's going to be a king of Israel and a king of Judah, a king of Israel and a king of Judah. Under Saul, David, and Solomon, this is what we refer to as, this is a nerdy nugget that's very important. This is what we refer to as the united monarchy. After Solomon, we're going to get a divided monarchy. And as you read Kings, you're going to get a report of what happened in Israel and a report of what happened in Judah. Israel, Judah, Israel, Judah, Israel, Judah. Okay, by the time we get to the end of Kings, okay, there's going to be a double exile. Israel is going to get exiled in 722 BC, okay, 722 BC, by the Assyrians. Judah is going to get exiled in 586 BC. You check my dates. I'm pretty sure I'm right. 586 BC by the Babylonians, okay? So, Judah in the south, Israel in the north. Judah in the south, Israel in the north. Jerusalem is in Judah. Judah, Jerusalem is in Judah, Israel. Judah, Israel. Now, you may be confused, like, wait, doesn't Israel include Judah? No, not, yes, technically, but no. Politically, no. Okay, and the roots of this division are right here. Chapter 20. Verse 8 to 10, while they were at the great rock in Gibeon, Amasa came to meet them. Joab was wearing his military tunic and strapped over it his waist with a belt, dagger, and a sheath. As he stepped forward, it dropped out of its sheath. Joab said to Amasa, "How are you, my brother?" Then Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand to kiss him. Amasa was not on his guard against the dagger in Joab's hand, and Joab plunged it in his belly, and his intestines spilled out on the ground without being stabbed again. Amasa died. Then Joab and his brother Abishai pursued Sheba, son of Bichri. This is murder. Joab is just on a killing spree, And what does David do? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Amasa was supposed to replace Joab. And Joab is just like, absolutely not. Okay? So you drop down to verse 23. Joab was over Israel's entire army. And he is completely unchecked. David cannot check him. Had David dealt with Absalom in the same way that he dealt with Sheba, it would have worked. And then there's an unnamed woman who's wise and able to do what David is actually not able to do. And you're going to see that is going to start in verse 16. It's going to say, a wise woman called from the city. Listen, listen. Tell Joab, come here so I can speak to him. Okay. All the way to verse 22 is going to talk about this wise woman. And so let's get into our timeless truth for the day. I love the story of this wise woman because she stops an entire war with what? With wisdom. With wisdom. One of the things that I loved even about our reading yesterday is that one of the things that David prays is that Ahithophel, I think that's his name, that his wisdom would be poisonous, essentially. And the reality is that wisdom wins more battles than a sword. Okay. Wisdom will win more battles than any sword ever will. Wisdom. That you always, if you're a leader, it doesn't matter who you are, you need to fight to have wise people around you, wise counsel. Your ability to lead will be directly impacted by your ability to attract and keep wise people around you. And you need to know when people are, when their wisdom has turned to poison, okay? So you can't just take wisdom blindly. You have to take wisdom with discernment. So wisdom will win more battles than a sword. That's our timeless truth for the day. Tomorrow, we finish 2 Samuel. I'm super excited. We only got a couple chapters, chapter 21, 22, 23, 24, four chapters tomorrow. I'll see you right here tomorrow for day 163. If you're on a streak, don't break it. If you are not on a streak, come on. Let's get some days going back to back. Let's get some consecutive wins under your belt so that you can start getting a daily diet of God's word. We don't want you binging once or twice a week. We want you on a consistent daily diet of God's word. I'm proud of you. I love you. I'll see you right here tomorrow for day 163. Peace. Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at The Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know. A community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com? I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.